The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast. Here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Danny Cannell. That's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at YouTube.com/Cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook network. Thanks to those of you who are watching live. Why don't you smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us. Come jump in the chat. Come participate in what is going to be a very fun show. We are going to explain why we have yet more evidence why Brian Hartline continues to be a top pick in our coaches draft every single year. We've got another update on Arch Manning. And we want to turn the spotlight away from some of those top build teams. Those teams are at the very, very top of, you know, the national title contenders, the conference title contenders, you know, those schools that we talk about all the time. Let's try to make sure that we zero in on a couple of dark horse candidates, teams that as we're doing our research, they stand out. We like what they've got. We think they could make some noise and they are not getting enough attention. We will get to all that in a little bit. But we start with the headline that doesn't often show up on the Cover 3 Podcast. Massive Louisville Cardinals football recruiting news. And that is not a slight to Scott Satterfield or his staff. I mean, this is just a program that doesn't often pop like we saw this week and like we are starting to see in this cycle. As they landed a commitment from five-star running back Reuben Owens II. He is the number one running back in the 2023 class. He is out of El Campo, Texas, and he chose Louisville over Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, and many others. So a couple levels to this that I want to kick around. We will begin, Bud, with the player himself, Reuben Owens II. The running back position, when we see these five-star guys, I haven't double-checked this, I apologize, but five-star running backs, not always something that litters the top 32 or top 33 of the prospect rankings. Just on its face, to see a five-star running back in the 2023 cycle suggests that this could be a special player. What do you think of Owens? What can Louisville fans be excited about?
Well, there's a lot for Louisville fans to be excited about here with Reuben Owens, one of our top running backs in the nation. When you watch the tape, first thing that stands out for you is just the burst, right? Like he can hit the home runs. We're not going to make a kid a five-star running back unless he can take it the distance. But he also, he has nice wiggle to him. He can catch football. He can run through arm tackles. He's a real difference maker at that level for those guys. And, I mean, they beat out some seriously good teams to get Reuben Owens. So, Louisville, take a note of this. This is interesting.
So they've got right now, they've got quarterback recruit Pierce Clarson on board. They've got a top 60 wide receiver in DeAndre Moore, and they are starting to put together a recruiting class that, again, a lot of movement left to go, but a recruiting class that is ranking in the top 15. Danny, do you see Scott Satterfield on the recruiting trail being able to build up enough goodwill to keep is this addressing hot seat concerns? Is this addressing concerns that Louisville fans have about the future of the Scott Satterfield era with the Cardinals?
It absolutely should now at this minute, because this is what it's all about, right? You want to get excited about talent acquisition, but it can quickly be forgotten if it doesn't translate to wins. This is remarkable what we're seeing happen. Historic, if you will. I don't know if you guys saw Bruce Feldman's stat that he put out. Shout out to our buddy Bruce Feldman. So with Owens going to Louisville, They now have four commits ranked among the 24/7's top 200. That's as many top 200 recruits as they had in previous 13 years combined. This is coming out of nowhere. So, and I did see a lot of Texas A&M fans on social media saying, hey, we get accused of buying classes. Like, what happened about Louisville? I don't know if it's all Scott Satterfield relation building. I don't know if that's what it is.
If it's all relation building?
Well, if any of it is. Is it any
relation building?
You know what? But this is a good thing. I say good. Let's get some of the wealth spread around. Let's see Louisville. Let's see what they can do if they finish with a top 15 recruiting class. So I think it's awesome to see. I think it shows that maybe there's some more money and interest and passion, whatever you want to call it, that's out there that might be willing to shake up those schools that we see every single time in the top 10 recruiting classes. I think it's refreshing to see a team that's outside of that usual group come to the forefront. And I think, let's see if they can carry this momentum forward.
It's pretty clear Shaq has reopened the Papa John's money pipeline to Louisville. Because, I mean, currently their class is ranked 11th in 2023, and it's behind teams like Northwestern, Texas Tech, teams you don't expect to see there. But as we talked about on the show, I think 2 weeks ago, they've got 10 commits. Five of them are four-star or better. Like, Owens is a five-star. They've got four other four-stars. So that's, you know, using the blue-chip ratio, that's 50% of your class right now is blue-chip prospects, which means that as we get closer to signing day, they are much more likely to still be hovering around the top 10 than teams like Northwestern, Texas Tech, and Cincinnati are at the moment based on the guys that they have. So, like, I don't know what this is going to mean long term. I think that this is clearly a much better kind of offseason storyline for Louisville than we've seen last year, you know, with the results on the field. It definitely a better feeling building for 2022. But like you guys were saying, this isn't going to mean a whole lot if the Cardinals show up and go like 5-7.
Which I don't think they will go 5-7. I'm fairly high on this Louisville team relative to some of the expectations out there. You know, this is just a bit of a perfect storm, right? They took Pierce Clarkson, Steve Clarkson's kid. Obviously, you guys have heard of the Clarkson QB retreat. Do you know who sponsors the Clarkson QB retreat?
Papa John's.
Adidas. All right. And what brand does Louisville wear?
Adidas.
Papa John's.
Right. So there's a lot of cheerleading going on from, you know, from that sector right now, which is great, I think. And I agree with Danny that it's awesome to see other teams get in on the recruiting act. Everybody was all very fearful. NIL is going to make four super teams only. No, it's not, because if you can go somewhere else and get paid and also get playing time, I'd rather do that than be like the third string running back at whatever program's, you know, paying just a little bit more, right? Like, playing time plus, you know, plus NIL deals are still really nice. I thought Jody Demling, our publisher at Cardinal Authority, had a nice point. And he said, look, Louisville is one of the biggest cities that does not have a pro sports team. Mm-hmm. And there are quite a few businesses here that would like to affiliate and get in on a piece of that action. So I'm not saying Papa John. I don't actually think that he's the one driving this. And look, if they lose, okay, like the class probably falls apart. But I'd rather have this now just in case I win. Because in case I win and I sign this class, I might get a contract extension, especially because there's a new – hell, if Louisville's AD situation wasn't such a disaster, is Scott Satterfield even coaching this year? Like he may have really hit the jackpot here as far as, you know, not having an AD in place, because they went through like two interims, and now they finally named the one interim as their new AD. If you don't have a boss, you're not getting fired. So it kind of allowed him to you know, work on the recruiting trail. They got the NIL stuff going. If they can go, like, they could go 8-4 this year, possibly. Maybe you keep most of these kids. I don't know. It's very interesting to see. They're certainly hitting out of the park right now with the NIL stuff.
We are coming up on the 1 year anniversary of NIL going into effect on July 1, 2021. And one of the things that we discussed on the show is, will this level the playing field? Will this provide opportunities? You know, we've said, where are the programs? Where are the cities? Where are the opportunities for some college football programs to close the gap with Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and the rest of the familiar names? Is this potentially, and again, long way to go before we actually get pen to paper, so to speak, for the rest of this 2023 class for the Cardinals, is this one of the better examples? I mean, clearly Texas A&M to number one, but I think that the jump that Texas A&M made from where they were to where they landed isn't quite what we would see from Louisville, a program that, what, is in the 40s, 30s and 40s normally? If they finish in the top 10, that feels like that would be one of the most significant examples of something that we predicted in terms of being able to use this in a way to close the gap and really put yourself in a different ballpark recruiting-wise.
Completely. I was just going to say
real quick, just to follow up, then you go, but I had written down their last five recruiting class rankings, 24/7, 32nd, 41st, 44th, 71st, and 30th. So this is a massive jump for them.
The other school I would point to there is the success that Oregon had closing very late after just, you know, a quick coaching transition. Remember, it took Cristobal a long time to take the Miami job, and then Lanning gets in there, and they landed some huge kids that I think were very much NIL-based, or at least NIL-based is probably too strong. NIL-assisted or, you know, influenced. So
that was the Oregon being able to get it done quickly is probably a big example of that. But the overall jump, this is a good example. And look, that is hope, or this is evidence, or this is a blueprint or a playbook for other programs to be able to use. Like when you are going to those boosters, when you are going to those prominent people within your community and trying to pass around the hat, you can now point to what Louisville's done and be like, look, we can make this happen. We got players from blue chips from California. We got blue chips from Texas. Like we are going all over the country to be able to bring in top talent and convince them to come to Louisville. I mean, they got that pony money, baby. You got to expect that they're going to be able to open up the coffers on that. One more, we're going to stay on the recruiting trail because in terms of the timeline here, we are about to enter a dead period where starting next Monday and it goes until July 23rd. So a lot of movement, a lot of commitments, a lot of visits going on, and the bang, bang commitments of not one, but 2 5-star receivers for Ohio State, as we mentioned earlier, certainly highlights one of the reasons why we've got Brian Hartline very highly rated in how we look at coaches in general, but especially assistant coaches, especially position coaches. So on Monday, we get Carnell Tate, the number 28 overall player in the current recruiting cycle. He commits to Ohio State. Then on Tuesday, we get Brandon Ennis, the number 18 overall player in the 2023 recruiting class. So you've got now, after we just had 2 first-round picks, after we just talked about Ohio State having the most loaded wide receiver room in the entire country, now we've got 2 5-stars in the upcoming cycle. And that is continuing this very, very impressive run. I'll read off this note from The Athletic's Ari Wasserman. Since the 2019 class and including the 2023 class, Brian Hartline has either signed or landed a commitment from 13 receivers who are top 100 nationally. During the same span, the rest of the Big Ten has landed a combined 2. 13 over 4 recruiting cycles, the entire rest of the conference combined, just 2. Yeah, I mean, it's like, is Ohio State's going to have first-round wide receivers for what? And now again, we're just play it out for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years? I mean, 10? Robot wide receivers going to be committing in 20 years from now? What do we even do with this plethora of options that the Ohio State offense is doing loading up on the perimeter?
So, I've seen Brandon Ennis play for like 5 years now. He has a very much right down to the same 7-on-7 team, by the way. It sort of a Ja'Cory Brooks progression in that he was good enough to play for South Florida Express as an eighth grader on their varsity team, which basically doesn't happen except for, you know, Ja'Cory and maybe one other kid. And he was very, very good as an eighth grader. And you know, you're always kind of skeptical with that. It's like, all right, this is awesome, but is he one of these guys just grew early? Will he keep getting better? Brandon Ennis keeps getting better. He's a very good route runner. He's got nice burst to him. He catches the ball. He plays hard. Like, he does care quite a bit. So I like all those things. Carnell Tate, I've seen less in person, but both these guys are good catchers of the football. I think like the cold weather won't bother them. Carnell is actually from Indianapolis, so he's a Midwest kid. And recruiting wise, this really was fascinating because a lot of people thought that Brandon Ennis would follow Lincoln Riley out to USC because he was very heavily favored to go to Oklahoma back in the day. And then many people thought that Carnell Tate was going to go to Tennessee. Tennessee's obviously been doing a great job with their NIL of late, and yet Ohio State keeps the, like, I know he's NIG, but to me, I kind of count him as more of a Midwest kid because he spent 17 years of his life there. They get him and they get Ennis. Obviously, they made trips up there together. It's just a huge win for Brian Hartline. And if you're a receiver recruit, you know that Ohio State is also going to have tremendous quarterback play going forward. They have Dylan Raiola committed for the class of 2024. So it's going to be pretty good guys throwing you the ball.
I talked with Jordan about this before the show began, but like I heard differently about Tennessee. Like I, from what I'd heard about Carnell Tate the last few months, it seemed like Ohio State was going to be the destination for a while. But I don't know. Maybe there was some stuff I didn't know about. Maybe the people I talked to were just overconfident. I don't know. But I think that just going back to Ohio State's side of this thing, like, yeah, this is just further cementing Ohio State as, you know, nothing's changing in the Big Ten anytime soon. Like we talked about, I was joking about, you know, Northwestern's ranked in the top 10 right now, recruiting-wise. Minnesota is at number 12. And you're seeing these teams kind of have good starts. But like I talked about with Louisville, the one reason you would think their class is kind of sticky is because half their current commits are blue chips. Ohio State has 12 commits. 11 of them are four-star or better. So, like, it's still a situation where, yeah, NIL is giving some programs more of a platform to land these kids and a better chance of doing so. And we're seeing Louisville taking advantage of it. We've seen Tennessee take advantage of it. But at the end of the day, it's programs like Ohio State that are still going to get the majority of these kids. And we're seeing that. And they've done a terrific job. And honestly, if you're a highly rated wide receiver out of high school right now, why the hell wouldn't you go to Ohio State? Because you've already seen like plenty of evidence of guys going there and becoming first round picks. And you've seen guys go to Ohio State who didn't get the field at Ohio State, who had to transfer and still ended up being first round picks. It's really a win-win situation for you.
It, to me, this was the least surprising bit of news we got over the last week. I mean, Louisville, you know, getting Owen, that's a surprise, right? And we talk about it. It's worthy of discussion. If you would have told me 2 5-stars would have signed with Ohio State, I'd be like, yeah, of course they did. Like, why wouldn't they? When I was being recruited out of Miami, you know what their pitch was to me? We're QBU. You know, we had Jim Kelly, Bernie Kosar, Vinny Testaverde, Steve Walsh. They like went down the list. That literally was their big pitch. Why would you want to go anywhere else? And I think if you're Ohio State and you're pitching a 5-star wide receiver, you would pitch them the exact same thing. And it does sort of the rich get richer, especially in this type of situation, because like Tom just said, if you're a receiver, why would you go anywhere else? Because not only are they amassing the talent that's there, but they're also developing it. I mean, you look at some of the scouting reports and like the draft reviews of the players coming out of Ohio State. What do you hear? Oh, good route runner, you know, crisp, clean wide receiver. You're like, you read the reports about them. They're coached up well from Brian Hartline. So it's not just having a talent, you know, open a go. You're going to get developed when you're there, too, from a guy who played in the league and had a pretty nice career, too.
Arch Manning. Over the last weekend, had an official visit to Texas. This concludes a very, very busy June. He, the number one prospect in the class, he took his official visit to Georgia, and he got all the photos in the Georgia gear. He took his official visit to Alabama. He did a 7-on-7 camp at LSU, and this past weekend, he was in Austin. And Danny, were you there?
I mean, we might have been frequenting the same restaurants, you know, Suerte, ATX, Cochina. I mean, hitting all the hot spots. It's extremely, I will say this, I like to eat nice restaurants when we're around college football weekends, traveling around. I have never been in a city where it's harder to get a reservation anywhere. I'm talking middle of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You have to eat at 5 o'clock. I'm guessing Arch Manning didn't have a hard time getting any reservations anywhere he wanted to eat. But that was my one thing I've noticed here in Austin. But yeah, they had him here, and I'm sure they gave him the full superstar treatment here in Austin, no doubt.
So that means it's just as we've talked about, Alabama, Georgia, Texas. He did the camp at LSU. But one thing that's come out of the visit that stood out to me is Texas seems to be just like totally pot committed, as you might be. But of course, you know, Alabama went and got 4-star quarterback Eli Holstein to make sure that they have a quarterback in the class. Now, I'm not sure what Georgia's quarterback plan is, you know, if they don't end up landing Arch Manning. But we are about to go into an Arch Manning dead period as the recruiting dead period hits. The reports are he's going to sort of take the next month, you know, dead period lasts until July 24th, you know, work, get with his family, figure out what their timeline is, figure out what their game plan is. But the reports coming out of Texas, you know, where is Texas in this? They don't have the on-field success that Alabama or Georgia do. You know, they don't have that, you know, long run of quarterback development, certainly. I mean, Steve Sarkisian, he has Mac Jones and a little bit of his own history of getting great offenses out there. But there is reportedly just a tireless effort to just be nonstop in Arch's ear, talking to his people, being as much as you can be. And this is Steve Sarkisian. This is quarterback coach. What's Milwee's first name, bud? AJ Milwee.
Yeah.
Those dudes have been just on top of like old school. Cause you can't get Arch with NIL. You know, you can't get Arch with anything.
Are you sure? I was thinking about this because I'm here in Austin. Facilities are insane. Like every single sport is insane. We're just, and I would agree with you. Here's my thought. I would agree with you. All of them are on par, right? Like they can all offer the same sort of package. But is there a school like Texas who, similar to the LIV Golf Tour, who is just blowing these offers or blowing it out of the water so much so that golfers are giving up their PGA Tour status? Is there the chance that Texas is in a position where they are more desperate than Alabama or Georgia to be relevant, to be back? And I would suggest that they probably have the resources from similar types of money background, not the murderous side and not the human rights violation side, but the oil backing side of it, where they might be able to cut a similar style of deal with Arch that would blow everybody out of the water. Cause I am curious. No, I would, that was my initial thought, was like you, Chip, like you're not going to impact him with money.
Right. He's a Manning.
But money talks no matter who you're talking to.
And another aspect of it too, is like, yeah, clearly his family has money. He's probably not going to have to worry about much for the rest of his life, but none of that money is his yet. And Texas, the money from Texas would be his. So I do think that it's like, it's probably not the top priority, but I think to say that it's not going to have an impact is.
I like that. Correct. No, yeah. That's a very fair point. I mean, it's like, can Sark and this Texas staff, but do you think that they're just going to be able to go so hard? It seems like they are desperate. Like they're calling them every single day. Like they are absolutely, you know, putting themselves in the position to just grovel at his feet. And I don't know, is it going to work?
I don't think that, first of all, I don't think it's going to be by an IL, right? I mean, I think it's, I just don't.
I would tend to agree with you. I was kind of making the case for
it was a great point. I like it.
Right down to the point of like, is LIV a good business decision as a golf tour? No. Is it a good business decision if you're trying to get people to invest in the Saudis? Probably so. Like, yeah. Almost like you could just overpay to that extent, right? Like, is it actually making a good business sense? You could turn a profit? No. But if you win, cool.
Which for Steve Sarkisian might be worth it.
Correct. Like, it's a great business decision for Steve Sarkisian.
Does landing Arch Manning commitment, does bringing him to Texas, is it worth sacrificing whatever else you have to sacrifice possibly?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have some really interesting choices here. You can never really count out Alabama, even though they do have another commit already. I think if you're Arch, you go in there thinking, I don't care. Like, I'm Arch Manning. I'm even though they try to, you know, downplay it, and they've kept his recruitment very much bottled up, and they've not made a media circus out of it like they could have. They've really tried to limit availability and just let him be a kid, which is pretty cool, honestly. You know, but.
But is that only because Manning Plus isn't out yet?
I think so. How long is Saban going to coach, right? Does Georgia ever actually open up its offense? I'm of the belief that they intended to, and then, you know, guys got hurt, right? They brought in JC Daniels for a reason. How long is Sarkisian going to be at Texas? Are they actually going to get things turned around? There is some question of uncertainty, even amongst these three great historic programs, that he's considering, right? But I guess you could say that anywhere, right? Like if he was considering Ohio State, would you say, hey, could Ryan Day jump to the NFL? Like there's always some kind of questions, and it's crazy we're going to nitpick, you know, Bama, Georgia, and maybe Texas.
Especially after this offseason when we saw Brian Kelly leave Notre Dame and Lincoln Riley leave Oklahoma. You would have said that, you know, before the season started last year, where everyone would look at each other like, you're crazy. It's just a new environment.
I will say it would not shock me if he fits at the Manning passing camp later this month.
Ooh. But he would have to announce it like in advance. He wouldn't surprise everyone, right? Like we would have to make this a televised event.
Here's what he needs to do. He needs to have the table set up for the press conference, and he's got the hats out in front of him. And then you have Peyton pick up one, you have Eli pick up one, and they toss it out, and then he pulls out the other one and puts it on his head.
And somehow it's an Illinois hat.
Yeah. So the Manning Passing Academy, what is will Bryce Young be there? Will Quinn Ewers be there? Will Stetson Bennett the fourth be there? Do we know who the lineup of counsel is?
What about DJU?
Will Stetson Bennett be his water boy at the Manning Passing Academy? Is that the question you're asking?
Yes.
I'm looking for this.
I bet they are. I mean, they have the top quarterbacks in the country come as counselors, so it would be the least surprise. I mean, I think they probably all are going.
I will say Bennett,
catch it. You know how there's the one player who catches it, but then hands it to the quarterback.
Wow.
Is that because you don't want to like hurt your hands, Danny? What is
apparently
that?
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, I think it was that thing. Like you get to a certain level where it's beneath you to have to catch the ball. I always kind of like catching the ball. Right. But it definitely becomes a status symbol. I'm going to have a guy catch for me for sure.
It's like the coach or wide receiver just sits there like, I throw so hard. We can't risk our quarterback's hands.
We do need to get an update on the Manning Passing Academy website. If you guys, I'm going to drop this in the private chat. The last update we have on this is from 2019. You know, Stetson Bennett will be there, according to Jordan.
Stetson Bennett will be there? Ooh, George is in the mix. If Stetson Bennett is willing to catch the passes during workouts for Arch Manning, that could be the deal breaker here.
What if we had, like, if you're the Mannings, though, I know you've kept this thing low-key. Don't you blow it out and bring a real elephant if he goes to Bama, or like actually like bring Bebo in, run Bebo through the Passing Academy, or like people have held up a bulldog before, so maybe not Uga.
Yeah, don't you think they're gonna do the? Don't you think the Manning way is all business? Like, hey, they're gonna take the low key approach. I think
they're gonna spend like 5 minutes thanking each school, and then like, all right, I'm going to wherever. You know, really appreciate it. Look forward to working hard and keep them head down. Hopefully they have a great education, you know, great college experience, and also, you know, make a lot of money to go to the NFL.
If he doesn't announce at the Passing Academy, that just gives us more time to script the Arch Manning commitment announcement. And then if he continues to drag this out until like November, we might as well shoot our own and just have somebody be Arch Manning. Coming up on the other side, we want to turn the attention on some teams that you might not be thinking about that could make some big noise in 2022. We've got some candidates as dark horses for the upcoming season. We get into that and more next.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. You can bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that is safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/cover and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I left this intentionally vague because I'm very curious to hear. We are less than 3 weeks away from starting our win totals here on the Cover 3 podcast. Like, we are about to turn into full sprint downhill, getting you ready for the upcoming season. We are going to be doing, you know, going through all of the Power Five conferences, the independent, some of the top group of five teams that are on our radar, you know, breaking them down one by one, giving you our thoughts on the upcoming season, what we like, what we don't like. But before we do that, I wanted to at least get a sense of where everyone is. You know, some of those teams outside of the regulars, outside of those top billing ones, those ones that are starting to get our attention. So I left it vague. Dark Horse could be, you think they're a dark horse for the national title. Dark Horse could be they're a dark horse for a conference title. Dark Horse could be, I don't know. Chip, I just wanted to talk about this team because I've been doing my research, flipping through my magazines and my spreadsheets, and they're starting to stand out to me. So dark horse candidates for 2022. Tom, why don't you get us started?
Well, I will say my first team probably meets the requirements of what we were looking for more. And the other parts of my teams, I took it in a different way. I didn't really go with teams that I think will compete for conference championships or playoff bursts. I just went with teams that I think are being overlooked and are poised to have much better seasons than they had last year. But this first one probably hits a lot of the things we're looking for. I'm going to go with Penn State. The last 2 years have been thoroughly mediocre. I think they're exactly 500. But as I've said, like when it comes to the 2020 season in the Big Ten and the Pac-12, I don't give any of those seasons any kind of real considerable weight as far as trying to figure out what happened or what's going to happen. I just look at what happened last year and I saw some problems with this team clearly. But I go into this season and I think there's reasons to think that Penn State will be better. I've talked about, I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten. I think there's a very good chance Michigan is the second best team in the Big Ten. But if it's not Michigan, I would take Penn State over anybody else in the conference. If you look at their season last year, they were 2-4 in one score games. But in those six games, they actually outscored their opponents. And the four losses came by a total of 12 points. And if you look through some of the losses were not exactly a bunch of crappy teams. I think that Sean Clifford is back. A lot of experience. Got his offensive coordinator back for the first time in his career at Penn State. He's going to be in the same offense with the same plays, same all that kind of stuff, which I think is huge. And we have talked about Drew Allar as a possibility for the reason to take maybe Penn State to another level, because as we've talked about for years here, like the one thing that has always consistently felt like hold Penn State back is they don't have that top upper echelon QB compared to the other elite programs. But what we haven't spent as much time talking about is Allar was not the highest rated player in Penn State's recruiting class last season. Five-star running back Nick Singleton will be in that offense this year. And that is something that I also think that the last few years, since Saquon Barkley left, since Miles Sanders left, I think kind of a game-breaking running back is something that Penn State has missed in its offense. And we've seen when they have that guy, they're a much better team. And I think Nick Singleton, I'm not saying he's going to be Barkley, but I think as far as talent-wise, he's the kind of guy. And as Bud said, they don't give guys five stars unless they're able to take it to the house every time they touch the ball. Nick Singleton is a five-star. I think he was the number one running back in the 2022 class. So that kind of stuff combined with a defense that is still going to be good, and it lost a few key players, but I don't think they'll have any trouble replacing them. I think this is a Penn State team that's poised to get to 9-10 wins.
I had Penn State on my list as well. I think that my questions are like so they're in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Right. You know, would like to see the Penn State defense getting back to being like truly dominant on the up front, and the offensive line probably does shoulder a little bit of the responsibility for why we haven't seen that run game really take off recently. I have gone full circle from thinking you have to go to Drew Allar to now being all in on like 42-year-old Sean Clifford and his like 33 starts, you know, just really taking the kind of jump that you want to see. I mean, the Big Ten's got a couple of them, like between him and Tanner, between a longtime fan of the show, B Rabbit is asking whether he has an NIL deal with the AARP. We'll have to look into that. I think that we have a great opportunity, especially for James Franklin, to sort of right what would be a ship that would be sliding backwards, right? Because another mediocre season is three straight mediocre seasons. And if you do have three straight mediocre seasons, especially on the back of signing a massive 10-year deal, then as we talked about a couple weeks ago with sort of, you know, where James Franklin is in a mailbag episode, I think that there's got to be a lot of urgency. There's got to be a lot of pop around that program right now to go and capitalize on what you've got right there. I also had Penn State on my list of about five or six options. Thoughts?
I like it. No, I would agree. I think they're going to be a team that people are going to pick. Hey, You know, when you do interviews, because it's such a lock to pick Ohio State, if you say, well, give me a team not named Ohio State to win the Big Ten, I think Penn State would be a very popular pick. And I could see it possibly unfolding that way, too.
So, all right, real nerdy here for a second. But
do it.
I listened to I can't remember who was talking about this. I remember listening to a podcast about how you, in the NFL, when you're betting like some of these like alternative futures markets and whatnot, how you have to model dynamic uncertainty with quarterback injury chances, right? If CJ Stroud stays healthy, Ohio State's winning the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure. Like, I wish somebody would give me odds on if he plays 13 games, are they the Big Ten champs, right? Like, I'd lay a pretty good odds on that. But if he doesn't, and like nobody's wishing injury on CJ Stroud, but that's basically what we're talking about, I think, in the Big Ten. If something happens to quarterback, obviously Ewers transferred out. They don't have the best quarterback depth right now. What would happen? I think Penn State is an obvious good choice. Like, I don't know. I think you guys nailed it. I agree with you.
Am I wrong? Did he miss a game last year?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
It was the shoulder. It was after Oregon. It might have been Army or Tulane. It was in the
layup game, right? It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a MAC team, I think, but I'm not sure.
Danny, who's got your attention?
All right. I got one for a playoff contender. And when I say it, I think the initial reaction would be like, well, why would, like, that's not a dark horse. And yet, when I hear people talking about teams, I hear people talking about the teams that are kind of rivals, whether traditional rivals or new rivals, because I see USC is a very trendy pick to make the playoffs, and I see Texas is a very trendy pick to have a monster year. I haven't seen many people talking about Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma could be just as good offensively as they've been in this Lincoln Riley run with Dylan Gabriel coming to town, with Jeff Lebby running that offense. And what has been Oklahoma's hangup under the Lincoln Riley tenure? It was the defensive side of the ball with defense, defense, defense. It brings in Alex Grinch. They get a little bit better, but they were by no means a juggernaut defensively. Brent Venables is a defensive-minded coach who is going to try to change a culture and have a tougher Oklahoma team than we have seen. Schedule sets up nicely. I think Oklahoma could be right back where they usually reside at the top of the Big 12. And if things fall their way, I think they could be right on the cusp of another playoff appearance. But I don't think they're going to be a pick that many people make for the playoffs. So I think is that fair to consider them a dark horse, or is that a little bit too much of a traditional favorite?
I wouldn't consider him a dark horse, but I get where you're coming from in that if you look at the Big 12 and a lot of the talk about the Big 12, like, no disrespect to either of them, because especially Baylor, because I love what Dave Aranda has done, but I think people are a little too comfortable just assuming Baylor is going to be just as good again and that Oklahoma State is going to be really good again. I still think that because of the coaching change, you have a point in that Oklahoma is sort of flying under the radar because they're being written off a little too bad. I wouldn't consider them a dark horse, no, but I completely understand what you're saying.
I think you could get away with calling them a dark horse for
playoff.
They are on most sites the favorite to win the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I guess for the playoff, a lot of it depends on, do you think we get two SEC teams? Do you think that the Pac-12 produces a playoff team? All those kind of things, right? I haven't seen anybody books-wise, offshore or brick and mortar, post to make playoff odds. But those are certainly coming pretty soon. They usually drop July-ish. I'd like to stay in the Big 12 if possible.
Yeah.
I actually have two that are not playoff teams for me, but teams that I think are could set the right way and maybe actually win the Big 12. The first one, a team that I already bet, TCU. Caesars hung a 28-1 on them. I gladly took that to win the Big 12. Here's the deal. When you handicap Big 12 games, and the Big 12 is a league, you always have to figure out who has five home games and who has four home games, because it's a round-robin type schedule. This year is the year that TCU gets five home games, and TCU is one of these teams that's really important because when they play the four road games, one of the road games is Kansas. So not that Kansas won't be improved. I think they probably will be, but that's still the team I want to play on the road if I'm trying to make it to the Big 12 title game. new coach and Sonny Dykes. I could see TCU playing better this year, playing harder. I think Gary Patterson's message was kind of lost on them at times last year. Not that they won't do well at Texas, but I think a fresh voice there is good. And the other one people seem to be overlooking, in my opinion, is Kansas State. I think it's a situation much like in the Big Ten where we discussed if CJ Stroud is hurt, then we can start talking about other teams to win the Big Ten. If he stays healthy, I don't think it's a discussion. If Oklahoma plays to the level Danny thinks they're going to play to, well, guess what? These teams aren't winning the Big 12. It's going to be Oklahoma. If they don't, then we can start talking about other teams. And like, is Baylor clearly better than Kansas State? Is Oklahoma State? I don't really think so.
I've got a question for you about TCU. Do you have a preference or a prediction on whether it ends up being Max Duggan or Chandler Morris at the quarterback position? Because they are a team that, similar to what you were pointing out about CJ Stroud, where I am looking at two starting caliber quarterbacks between Morris and Duggan, and I think that they probably look at their room and think that we can win with either one of these guys, at least at the Big 12 level. Do you have an idea of which way they go, or a prediction or a preference?
So we did our summer school episode, dropped it recently in the feed with TCU. And I think there's a pretty good chance, not a pretty good chance. Look, even our insiders didn't know who it was going to be. But I do think Morris is potentially more consistent. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just what they're going to look for. Just a guy who can be accurate and get the ball out. I don't know. I'm actually kind of comfortable with the situation because I think they have two guys who at least have some ability.
I'm going to do a big surprise here and take us to the ACC. I think Miami can beat Clemson. Now, I wouldn't bet on them beating Clemson twice, which is probably what you need to do to win the ACC championship. But it's a late season, regular season game. If they had to play, you know, two times within a couple weeks, I think that the Clemson Tigers would have a very difficult time, especially having the entire season to get in, to get settled. I think that most importantly, it's going to be defensively, where you've got a whole lot of transfers on the front part of the defense that are trying to mesh with, you know, your very, very super talented dudes like, you know, Leonard Taylor and Jafari Harvey up on the defensive line. Obviously, we've mentioned James Williams' name a lot at safety. He is an all ACC caliber player. And I just think that the raw talent, the offensive ceiling that Tyler Van Dyke gives you, along with some of the playmakers that you have, I want to see what Jalen Knighton looks like within Josh Gattis's system. I think that while it is very easy to say Miami is a contender for the ACC championship because I believe they are the best team in the Coastal, I don't think that that's a dark horse candidate. But I think that Miami, with a win against Clemson, and potentially an ACC championship win against Clemson, would make itself in the conversation for a college football playoff, would make itself in the conversation for being a top five, top 10 team. And I just don't think that's where they're at right now. As I've continued to dive deep on this, the idea that Mario Cristobal is going to be able to land and hit the button and be able to raise this level to the point where Miami is making national noise beyond just being the U is back, you know, the internet fans are going crazy. I really like what he's done through the portal and the way the depth chart lines up. I think that when they take the field against Clemson, we'll know obviously what Clemson has done at the quarterback position. But if you ask me to take right now the option of Tyler Van Dyke versus DJU / Cade, I wouldn't have a strong argument for TVD, but I do think that he at least does seem to be the more proven option among those three quarterbacks. So I think that Miami is on my dark horse list solely because of where they stack up next to Clemson, where I think that if they played twice, Miami could get one of them.
Can we stay in the same division?
Sure.
Pitt.
Yeah, you've been on Pitt. I've noticed that.
Like, last I'm not few saying conversations. That I'm not picking Pitt to win, but just try to think of situations. Like, I agree. Miami has a ceiling that Pitt doesn't have. I think Chip nailed it. Like, if everything clicks, Miami could be the best team in the ACC. I think Chip, like, 100%. What if they don't click?
Oh, yeah. It's Miami.
Right. What if Clemson's offense doesn't really come together? Pitt returns entire offensive line, entire defensive line, entire secondary. we've seen Pat Narduzzi style teams do pretty okay with that. Like, I'm a little concerned they go back to kind of, you know, caveman ball where they try to run the ball all the time and it's just not efficient enough. They play too many close games and they lose a couple too many of them. But man, that's a lot of experienced guys. Like, that defense is going to be too much for a lot of the opposing offenses they play. Their schedule's friendly. They don't get Clemson. I don't think they get NC State either. I think it's like Louisville and Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Louisville Pitt is the most interesting game as I'm trying to do. I'm writing ACC win totals right now for CBSSports.com. Story's going to go live on Thursday. And I have to, we do it not like with just a bet, but you actually have to list the result of every single game. So you can't do that thing that some analysts do and just take the over to make everybody happy for all 14 teams. Like, you actually have to say, like, no, this total is here because this game breaks this way. And the Louisville Pitt game is going to probably decide both Louisville and Pitt's win totals. And I think that game could be kind of spicy, which, you know, to Bud's point earlier, means I'm probably in with you on being a little bit high on the cards, but the running back, if they go back to caveman ball, I wonder if the running back room with Vincent Davis and Izzy and the rest of that group, I wonder if those are players that are ready to carry the load, because when Pitt won the ACC Coastal Division and for the first time and made it to the ACC championship game, they had 2 1,000-yard rushers, and they had an offensive line that was able to pave the way. They went 6-2 in conference play, bounced back from a slow start, just kind of got hot running the football. I thought that those running backs were at a different level, but I clearly could be proven wrong, as they've got also got the new offensive coordinator in Frank Signetti. So
Before we let Tom go to the Big Ten, because I know he's itching for another Big Ten team, can I stay in the division?
Yeah.
Wow.
I got a team.
Everybody in the ACC is a dark horse this year.
It pretty much is. I think that speaks to the state of the conference right now, because everybody's sleeping on all of them. I might be biased because I talked to Mac Brown this morning, but I was looking at, so I think trendy picks in the ACC are NC State, Devin Leary's been all the talk, and deservedly so. Miami, you just brought up. I think they're a trendy pick. I'm looking at win totals. NC State's is 8.5. Miami's is 8.5. North Carolina's is 7.5. I think North Carolina has more wins than NC State or Miami at the end of the year.
Ooh. Okay.
I think Sam Howell was good. I think his fifth round draft stock, where he actually went, kind of was a more realistic version of Sam Howell. I think he had his limitations. I think he was a really good college quarterback, but I don't think the loss of Sam Howell is going to be as dramatic as we make it. I think there'll be a better team around him. Whatever quarterback wins the job, whether it's Jacoby Criswell or Drake May, I think both of them might be just as talented as Sam Howell was. He's going to have a great receiver to throw to, and Josh Downs. You got a national championship winning coach now helming the defense, and Gene Chizik. But most importantly, look at the recruiting rankings. Mac Brown has done a pretty good job assembling talent year in and year out for the Tar Heels. And I think this team will have what they need, because last year everyone was telling them how good they were. I think this team needs a little edge to them. And I think maybe they have that edge this offseason, coming a little bit irritated. So I'm going to say North Carolina, my dark horse from the ACC.
I wanted to. Sorry, Tom, do you want to weigh on that?
No. Before we go Big Ten. How many more ACC teams are you guys going to list?
I mean, I
Duke has a new head coach. I'm just kidding.
Now, my remaining teams, I've got 2 Pac-12s, a Big Ten, and an AAC left. So there's no more ACC teams. I'm all tapped out there. Same I will here. Say my North Carolina pushback is that the offensive line was supposed to be awesome last year, because they were bringing back everybody. They got all their starters back, and then they weren't all that good. And defensively is where we've got a lot of those blue chips. And I would say that, you know, development of those blue chips into Power 5 level stars, still kind of waiting on that. Can Gene Chizik unlock Dez Evans? Can Gene Chizik unlock some of those big recruiting wins on the defensive side of the ball? If it happens, I'm right there. I'm right there with you. But those are sort of my questions: is being able to convert those highly rated recruits into stars at the ACC level.
I have like positive belief in the offense. But my two main questions with North Carolina are, one, is your strength program any good? Because I look at like late stage Texas under Mac Brown, and I felt like those guys were soft. And I thought Carolina got pushed around too often last year. And I'm willing to write that off and go back in on them with Danny this year, to them being too young last year. But they did look soft. Like they got physically bullied by teams that shouldn't be doing that. The other question is, it is. All right,
Argyle. The question I
have, the intimidating Carolina Blue.
Was it the D coordinator or was it the DB coaching? Because I think there was a lot of finger pointing going on in that room last year, and they made a change at D coordinator, right? I think there was disagreements on how things should be run by that coaching staff. So we'll see if the new DC can work with the existing assistant coaches there. I'm very, very curious to see how that plays out in Chapel Hill.
Is that dissension coming from one of my draft picks?
Yeah, I was going to say. let's talk about Trey Bly of Danny Cannell, DKU.
Great recruiter.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom.
Oh, well, you guys are busy telling me every team in the ACC is going to win 10 games. I'm going to go to the conference where plenty of teams usually do win 10 games. Nobody's picked an SEC team yet, and I'm about to. And sorry, Jordan, it's not the one you want me to pick. I'm going to the SEC West, where we know what Alabama's going to be. We know Auburn could be pretty bad. We don't know exactly what LSU is going to be like in its first season under Brian Kelly. Arkansas, can they maintain what they did last year? Or do we see them step back a little bit? Texas A&M, probably still going to be pretty good. Ole Miss, 110 games, maybe some regression coming. But another team that nobody's really spending much time talking about, Mississippi State. This is a team that last year defensively was good, for especially considering, you know, it's a Mike Leach team. You're not used to Mike Leach teams being good defensively, but they were. And if you look at them on the season, they outgained opponents by 1,254 yards while going 7-6. That's not something you tend to see. In one score games, they were 2-3, despite having a plus 665 yard margin in those games, which was the best in the nation of any team in the country in one score games. And they had a negative 3 turnover margin in those games. So if a couple bounces go their way, they're probably finishing 8-5, 9-4. And also, if you just look at Mike Leach traditionally, his teams tend to take a step forward in year 3 or 4. Like it happened at Texas Tech. It happened at Washington State. It could happen at Mississippi State. The only thing that kind of gives me pause is if you look at their schedule, obviously they're in the SEC, so it's never going to be easy, but they've got to go to LSU, Kentucky, Bama, and Ole Miss all on the road. And they also draw Georgia from the East. So I think that's probably going to limit how good they can actually be record wise. But this is a team where if it finishes third place in the SEC West, I won't be shocked.
I won't be shocked, because I've identified that date against Georgia as one of the, if we look at Georgia's schedule, we look at Georgia's team, and it's like, what, 12-0. They show up in Atlanta undefeated. I mean, show me the, if they beat Oregon, it ain't going to happen. So then you have to challenge yourself to be like, okay, well, where could it happen? And when you do the Florida-Georgia game very next week, you're going to host Tennessee, and then you've got back-to-back road games, Mississippi State and Kentucky. I think that going to Starkville, when you're going to be sitting at 9-0, you're going to feel like all the toughest games are behind you, or at least like two of the really challenging ones, Tennessee testing your defense with their offense, Florida with the rivalry aspect to it. Auburn's already happened. I'm with you, because I feel like Mississippi State's not going to be a team that I think is going to win the SEC West, but on Georgia's schedule, and that's what a mammoth Georgia is, that we consider this an accolade to like put in a magazine. What's the team most likely to beat Georgia? I think Mississippi State's got to be near the top of that list.
Did you guys catch Mike Leach, I believe, saying that it was not like a sewn up quarterback competition?
That's for Will Rogers? I did not catch that.
I thought I saw that on Twitter. Maybe the comments actually could help me out here. I know I probably just shouldn't be citing, you know, anonymous or just Twitter that I can't even remember the handle, but apologies. I think they're going to be pretty good, man. Like I don't know if they're going to be good enough to beat like a Bama or Georgia, but I do think that they are potentially good enough to make Mississippi State or Ole Miss and Arkansas and Texas A&M fans really mad about how their season goes. Because I guarantee you those schools look at Mississippi State as a W. When I'm doing my spreadsheet, I have that kind of as a coin flip for those teams.
So he would elevate them to Dan Mullen status.
I think they can get to 9 wins. Yeah. I wouldn't be, if they win nine games this year, I'm not going to be like, it'll probably be best case scenario, but I'm not going to be like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm.
Should they win eight games?
Yeah.
I'm
more interested in this quarterback battle that's taking place. The dude led the SEC in passing, but it wouldn't be surprising from a Mike Leach team. Like, he expects even better. Honestly,
like, the QB is interchangeable to me in every single right. Mike Leach team. It's the same guy, every single one of them.
Utah?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, is Pac-12.
Do they even count as a dark horse, as the reigning Pac-12 champions?
Not to me, they don't.
As a playoff team. I don't think they've almost made the playoff twice
in the last few years.
Well, this is the year. This is the year that they punch through. This is it. That's right. The take then from the dark horse.
What are our ground rules then for who counts as a dark horse playoff team? Like, clearly not Ohio State, Georgia, Bama.
Right. Those are the favorites.
Everybody in the ACC, according to you three.
Non Clemson. Can't count Clemson.
Clemson, obviously not. Yeah. Clemson will probably be odds on to make the playoff.
And honestly, I think that the Oklahoma qualifies because Lincoln Riley's gone, because we've undergone this big change where the Oklahoma that you'd be considering as a college football playoff contender is not the same Oklahoma in terms of style or identity that was in the college football playoff.
All right. You want to go deeper? I'll go deeper dark horse in the Pac-12. And I don't want to say they win it, but UCLA. UCLA, Chip Kelly, DTR's back, head in the right direction, strongest season he's had. There's got to be some, if there's anything in that locker room that says, man, watch what's going on around town, across town, like that's got to irritate every single player in that UCLA locker room. And I think in general, too, the Pac-12 is extremely wide open. Like, if you looked at the hierarchy of teams, talent-wise, I think it makes complete sense where you have those three teams at the top in USC, Utah, and Oregon. Outside of that, I would say UCLA is in a strong position to kind of, with all the turmoil that's going around the conference. So why couldn't UCLA be that team that comes out on top?
Defense was pretty bad last year for UCLA. They used a little bit of a disjointed season. You got, you know, DTR, Zach Charbonnet also back, one of a really, really solid running back. I feel like UCLA is a high floor, low ceiling team for me.
Utah and USC at home.
Yeah.
And that just fierce environment they have to go to.
We've talked about
9-3.
We've mentioned Utah and UCLA. I've got another Pac-12 South team. This is not a dark horse in the idea of competing for a conference title, hell, even a division title or a playoff berth. But I was doing like research for a story I had to write last week, and this kind of popped up to me. We spent a lot of time talking about how Nebraska was the greatest 3-win team in history last year. That's tired. That narrative's done. We're moving on. We've got a new one. 2022 Arizona was the greatest 1-win team in the history of college football. This is a team that went 1-11 last year. But if you started looking at the numbers, like, I was on Arizona last year, Chip. Why did I like them?
They play hard.
Right. They played hard. And they were also a team that was in pretty much every single game they played and then would shoot themselves in the foot with terrible quarterback play and turnovers. They would drive down the field, get to the red zone and screw up. There were four guys on that team last year who threw at least 10 passes. Only one of them threw more touchdowns than interceptions, and that was Jamari Joyner, a wide receiver. The three quarterbacks all threw more interceptions than they did touchdowns. But looking back at other numbers here, they finished the year with a total yards margin of -177, despite being 1-11. For context, if you look at the teams that finished around them in that number, especially in the Power Five, they mostly all went bowling. Iowa went 10-4 with a worse yardage margin than Arizona had. They only scored 10 points off of turnovers all season long and allowed 79. That -69 points off turnover margin ranked 128th nationally. Now you look at them coming into year two, they're still going to play hard, but they've upgraded at quarterback with Jaden Delora. It's their second year under the new coaching staff, so you can expect some more, you know, familiarity with everybody on that roster going in. They've got a solid recruiting class coming in. They've got some impact transfers. Nobody that's like high star besides Delora, five star, you know, guy that you're probably grabbing attention, but guys that can come in and do the job and be improvements over what they had last year. The schedule is still somewhat of a concern, but this is an Arizona team that It might go bowling. I'm just going to say it. It might get to a bowl.
So I was remembering Arizona in late in the season pushed Utah, like really like jumped out to an early lead. They had Utah at home. And I want to read the lead here from the AP game recap. Cameron Rising's long hair was still dripping wet at the post-game press conference 30 minutes after the final whistle, giving an indication of the bruising physical altercation in the desert. His Utah Utes had earned a victory, but it was far more difficult than expected. Arizona plays hard. They make Cameron Rising's hair be dripping wet. Nobody else made Cameron Rising's hair be dripping wet like that. Come on. I'm with you. Arizona plays hard. We'll be on win total over. We'll be waiting for the
power. 2.5. That's it. 2.5 win total.
Over.
They lost to Northern Arizona. Their one win was against a conference opponent.
I think they lose an FCS game again this year, though. Did you guys see who they have for FCS this year?
North Dakota State, which is just an absolutely stupid move scheduling wise. Just why are you scheduling North anybody? I don't just mean Arizona. I mean any Power Five program. Why in the world are you scheduling North Dakota State? What are you hoping to accomplish there?
There are three games. San Diego State on the road.
Mississippi State.
And then hosting North Dakota State.
They could.
I think they start 0-3.
They're going to beat North Dakota State. That is going to be the game right there in which my entire narrative about Arizona 2022 starts.
Well, hey, Arizona State at the end of the season, who's coaching?
Might be
DK. Who knows?
Colorado at home. Okay. There's another potential for you right there. We already know they can beat Cal. Mm-hmm. They hung right there with Washington. We'll see. Seattle's a hard place to win. Okay. Any others that we want to highlight before we get out of here? See, I left it loose so that we could, you know, talk. We're not going to talk about all these teams until we get to win totals. So good to get the juices flowing. Anybody else on the list that we didn't get to?
This is another kind of like lower, like I had five, but Kansas State was one Bud mentioned. The other team, the only G5 team I had on my list is Tulane in the American, simply because their offense was very explosive last year. It was just way too inconsistent defensively. They were awful. And if you look at them, they were 0-5 in one score games. They had 11 turnovers in those games. They've got a very manageable non-con. I think if they could find some consistency and just take better care of the football, they will naturally improve by a few wins. So I think that looking in the AAC, they could be a team that's better than most people are expecting.
We go to the Mountain West for one.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Who's the new Jim Svoboda? Who's the new? I was looking for the new offensive coordinator at Tulane because I know Chip Long.
I don't have it off the top of my head.
To go to Georgia Tech. That was Jeff Collins, big Hail Mary.
Chris Watt?
Jim
Svoboda, yeah.
Central Missouri's head coach. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mountain West, Bud.
UNLV.
That's a dark horse.
Yeah. Like I'm not saying they're going to make a bowl, but I think it is possible they could make a bowl, right? They had three quarterbacks play last year. You know, injuries were issues. They get Harrison Bailey in. I'm not even sure he's going to start, but at least that's a decent floor for them. You know, he was at Tennessee. I also think you need to pay attention to like who else in this this league is down. And I think UNLV is defensively better than Hawaii and Nevada this year. And that's not been the case in previous years. I mean, they unfortunately do play some real heavyweights from the other side. Like you get Air Force, you get Fresno. That's tough, but I don't know how good North Texas will be. I think San Jose State's a bounce back team, but I could see them maybe making a bowl here.
Yeah, and they finished 2-10. They led at halftime in five different games last year.
Yeah.
They only won one of them. And that typically doesn't happen. So, yeah.
Chip, go ahead. I was going to say, is your AAC the same as mine?
Memphis?
No.
Yeah. I was going back through and I realized that during the course of the regular season, I didn't look at Seth Hennigan's true freshman campaign as being something that was really significant. But he threw for like 3,300 yards and 25 touchdowns and he was a little bit shaky at time. There wasn't a lot of consistency, but he was also a true freshman starting in in a team that was undergoing a lot of turnover. So I think that it goes one of two ways for Memphis, where either they have completely lost the rope on being one of the better teams in that conference, and there's going to be a missed opportunity when the mountaintop opens up with Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston all leaving to go to the Big 12, or they start to show a little bit of a step forward. Hennigan has another strong performance, tightens up on some of the mistakes, and we see Memphis having a kind of offense, you know, like we were used to with Norvell, and being really explosive.
I like it. I don't have any feel for the AAC so far. I feel very good about what I'm doing in the Mountain West. I feel really good about the Sun Belt. Obviously, we did every SEC team for summer school, so I feel good there. Man, I do not know what to expect in the AAC. Like, how big a drop-off is Cincinnati going to have? Does UCF bounce back because now they're going to go to a running quarterback, and that's kind of what Gus Malzahn does well as opposed to this passing stuff? Like, do we think Houston takes another step, or if Houston just plays as well as it's played last year, is that good enough to win the league? I'm not a believer in East Carolina at all. I agree with Tom. Like, I think Tulane and USF have a chance to be better than East Carolina this year. But who's the baseman of that league? I mean, if we're going real sicko here, like, do we think Navy's going to suck again? I assume Temple will suck.
Yeah. I've got Temple near the bottom. That's like the – and then where's Tulsa at?
That's another question. Like, under Phil Montgomery, they're pretty decent. Like, they're not going to win the league, but they're
– it's going to be a very –
3-9.
I feel like that's going to be conference decided by injury.
Mm.
Whoever stays the healthiest is going to have a really good shot.
Yeah. So who's
your – I had UCF as the dark horse to win the conference. Cincinnati, I don't think he's going anywhere with Luke Fickell, what he's building. But he's been crushing it. Gus has been crushing it in the transfer portal, including – and what Bud alluded to, I think if he could build his ideal quarterback, it might look like John Rhys Plumlee. So we'll see if he wins the starting job, because Mikey Keene did a pretty good job filling in Dylan Gabriel's absence. Also, they finished the season really strong. 3-3 felt like, man, is this going to blow up in UCF's face, bringing in Gus? And they got the ship righted towards the end of the season. So I think he'll be coming in with some momentum and a bunch of graduate transfer talent coming in there too. So UCF, keep an eye on him.
Like that a lot. We will be back tomorrow, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, with another mailbag episode. A reminder, if you want to participate in the mailbag episode, you can join us live, or you can submit a question for the big old bag of mail by leaving us a 5-star review. And in that review, put your question. We will tackle it in a future mailbag episode. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.